Hello again, and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Jean Marie, and Ron will not be joining us.
Today's episode is a little different.
Okay.
We're not focusing on one diagnosis,
okay,
but on a question that cuts across almost every condition we talk about on our show.
Okay.
Is mental health changing fast enough? We're going to talk about how mental health care has evolved, what's still painfully lagging behind, and how technology, therapy models, and even recreational therapy are trying to close the gap. And we will share some thoughts on what you can ask for right now, even while the system is catching up.
I have some thoughts. So why this topic and why now?
Because almost every story we hear from our listeners has a mental health thread running through it. I know we talked about the gut-brain axis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a body-brain axis. Maybe it does touch everything. Whether someone has a chronic pain, a neurological condition, cancer, autoimmune disease, or is a caregiver, mental health is always part of the picture. And yet, people still tell us about waiting lists, stigma, rushed appointments, or feeling like their emotional health is treated as an afterthought. On the other hand, we see progress. More people talking openly about anxiety, depression, PTSD, burnout. And there are mental health apps, telehealth visits, even therapy over video. On the other hand, suicide rates are still high. People still struggle to find affordable care. And kids and teens are facing crises, and we don't even have a language for a generation
that are facing crises that we didn't even have a language for a generation ago.
Thank you.
Because they, you know, like, you know, when you were growing up, you know, if there was a school shooting, that would have like shut down the nation.
Yes. Yes. Right. Things have gotten a little bit worse.
Different.
Yeah. We have wanted to ask out loud, is mental health care actually changing fast enough for the people who need it?
All right, well, let's start with the positive. What has genuinely changed in terms of mental health care over the last 10 to 20 years?
Well, a few big shifts come to mind.
Okay.
First, awareness and language. Many people now recognize terms like panic attack, ADHD, bipolar disorder, autism spectrum, and trauma. A generation ago, these were either misunderstood or not talked about, like taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Second, there's a lot more brain-based understanding. We talk more about brain chemistry, trauma's effect on the nervous system, and the connection between physical and mental health.
Okay, and we've also seen more treatment options and formats available, not just one-to-one on one therapy in an office, but group therapy, telehealth sessions, peer support groups, intensive outpatient programs, partial hospitalization programs, and there are new and different approaches to treating things like CBT, DBT, trauma-informed care, mindfulness-based therapies, acceptance and commitment therapies, and more integrated care inside primary care and specialty clinics. And there's also cultural conversations. You know, individuals who are in the spotlight, like celebrities, athletes, and influencers who talk openly about going to therapy, taking necessary medications, or even just needing time off for their own mental health. And that doesn't magically fix access for everyone else, but it does help to normalize the individuals seeking help, especially mental health help, in a way that, you know, we never had discussed before. It was rare before.
Right. And from a recreational therapy angle, I've seen mental health programs that include structured leisure education, coping skill groups, using art, music, movement, nature, or games, and community reentry activities. It's not just about talk about your feelings, but it's also learn what actually restores you and practice healthy ways to cope. Okay, now the harder part. What has not changed fast enough?
Well, what I've seen is people's inability to cope and to, you know, that's, I don't know if you've ever watched a police body cam video, it seems like individuals are having a harder and harder time coping
and they're
and
like,
self-control and self-regulation.
So they're kind of devolving into addiction.
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say more like along the lines of, you know, saying here is why I'm acting the way I'm acting instead of learning coping mechanisms so that when you're in a high stress situation, no matter what the high stress situation is, that you're able to rationally and in a controlled manner, you know, deal with the situation. But anyway, okay. So the first word that comes to mind is also access is a problem. Some individuals face long waiting lists for therapy or, you know, for mental health therapy because there aren't enough providers who accept their insurance or accept insurance. We've spoken with, you know, guests before who live in areas where mental health care providers, because of the way the population and the socioeconomic situation, their specific area,
right?
Individuals can pay out of pocket. So those providers just don't accept insurance. So finding a healthcare provider, a mental health care provider who accepts insurance can be complicated. And there might be fewer providers who specialize in complex medical conditions and rare issues, and finding care if you're in a remote area. It might be difficult to find mental health care in rural areas or in low-income areas. And, you know, no matter what your situation is, I think everyone at some point in their life will benefit or could benefit from mental health care. So having access to it is vital. And people still hear, you know, things like we're not taking new patients or, you know, the next available appointment is 4 months ago. Well, if you're in crisis, that can be problematic. There are emergency numbers that are available in many areas. Here in the United States, we do have, emergency numbers for calling to call and speak with a live person if you're in crises. But knowing that, you know, what's available can play a role.
Okay. Well,
and learning from a young age how to just general coping skills can be vital.
Okay. And then another setback, I guess, would be affordability. And even if you find a therapist, the copays or deductibles or out-of-network fees can make ongoing care feel impossible.
Right, because mental health care, it's not just go to the doctor and you're done. It's an ongoing, you know, program. It takes a long time, and it can then be expensive.
Right. Another problem is stigma. Stigma is not gone. It's better. It's better, but it has not disappeared. Some workplaces still penalize people, officially or unofficially, for needing time off for mental health. Some families still say things like, just toughen up, or you're overreacting, or in certain cultures or communities, mental health issues are still seen as a weakness or a moral failure instead of a health condition.
And we also hear from listeners who feel like their mental health is minimalized because they have a physical diagnosis. So, of course you're depressed, you're not feeling well, but actually, you know, you need treatment for both situations, both conditions.
Right. It's a whole body.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, some people with complex physical symptoms are dismissed as only having mental health issues, and their legitimate physical concerns are brushed off. That either-or thinking Either it's physical or it's mental. That can still cause a lot of harm.
Sure.
Let's talk about technology. We have therapy apps. We have mood trackers. We have meditation platforms, online support groups, and more. Is this progress? Is this enough?
Well, I think it's encouraging, but there's always room for growth. People who may not have ever, you know, felt comfortable walking into a therapist's office might feel comfortable having an appointment with a counselor or having text communication with a counselor. And then apps that remind you to practice, you know, like, for example, breathing exercises or track your mood or track your, they can notify you if it seems like your stress levels are increasing or even monitor your sleep. All these things can come into play and help you form a better picture, a clearer picture of your overall health and wellness and how those things also come into play with your mental health. And even like menstruation tracking apps can help you, you know, realize what an effect something like menstruation can have on your overall mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Online platforms can help you also connect to a therapist who, you know, shares your cultural background if that makes you feel more comfortable. Language specialty providers. So if English isn't your, you know, first language and you feel more comfortable communicating in another language, then online it can be, you know, it can help you find a provider that speaks your language, which can be really important.
Right.
Or if
right.
you have a specialty need or if you're in a remote area. But typically therapists to be covered by insurance and
you have to be in the same state.
And to abide by regulations, they have to be within your state. But, you know, a state can be a rather big geographic area. And so you might be able to access care from hours away from where you are located because that provider is online.
Right. Yeah. Online services are becoming more and more common.
Mm-hmm. But there are still some drawbacks in some areas that we can improve.
Okay. Well, because technology cannot fix systemic problems by itself, if someone is in crisis, experiencing abuse, facing homelessness, or navigating a serious medical diagnosis, an app alone is not going to address all of that. And there are questions of privacy, data protection, quality control, and whether the person on the other end of the screen has the training and the support that they need. It also does not solve equity issues. Not everyone has a smartphone or stable internet or a private space for video sessions or digital literacy to even know how to do all this. We risk creating a two-tier system where people with resources get high-tech personalized care, and others still get left behind.
And I would also say that, because they're here in the United States, they closed a lot of the residential mental health care facilities in the 70s and 80s. So we shifted that population basically back to...
homeless.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that... We shifted it back to the community on a community level. So if the community doesn't have a support structure in place to help support people who need mental health care or addictions care or things of that nature, it can be a problem in a cycle. So because, you know, you're putting a strain on resources on a local level, but not providing the policies and the personnel and the things that, you know, they need to help care for individuals that are in crises or need, you know, medication or things of that nature.
Well, from a recreational therapy perspective, technology can be used in creative ways to assist people with mental health problems. We were talking, I think,
or even just to benefit everyone's mental health.
Yeah, I think we were talking about VR experiences last week.
Yeah.
VR experiences to practice social skills or to reduce anxiety. That would be a good way to go for some people.
But again, then
they'd have to have VR, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Online adaptive gaming groups build community that they may not have otherwise. And apps that help schedule meaningful activities, track energy, and plan pacing. But somebody still has to help the person figure out what actually helps me feel calmer, more connected, more myself. And that's where human support is irreplaceable.
Yeah, and from what I've read and seen, another community resource that seems to be taking on the role of mental health care and residential mental health care even, is things like the local library.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, again, a resource that doesn't, or a, it's it, they're not, that's not what the individuals there are trained to do. It's not maybe the most optimum location for that. And perhaps it is a good location for, you know, groups to meet and help support people. But yeah, there has to be structure in there as well.
Right.
And let's bring this. Let's talk about mental health showing up as part of rehabilitation.
Okay. Well, it's everywhere,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not named.
Okay.
You know, let's say you've had a stroke or a spinal cord injury, amputation, cancer treatment, chronic pain, or a progressive disease.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to face feelings of grief, fear, frustration, anger, and maybe identity loss, and your whole self, your whole sense of self can change. And we see anxiety about the future. We see depression about lost roles. You know, like if somebody has to retire because of a stroke, now they're no longer a breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes PTSD from medical trauma.
And there's a real benefit in incorporating mental health as part of, you know, the core, a core part of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's, you know, a psychologist, a social worker, no matter. It is, they can come in, you know, and help incorporate mental health and build that into the rehabilitation.
Right. And I think that recreational therapy tries to bridge the gap. You know, like when we plan activities, we're not just thinking this will improve balance. We're thinking, will this help this person feel more like a parent, a partner, or a friend again?
Mm-hmm.
Or will this give them a sense of mastery and control that they may have felt that they lost control?
Mm-hmm.
Will it help them reconnect with joy or community? These are mental health goals as much as physical ones.
Right. And so mental health care needs to keep up with the times, obviously, and be incorporated into every aspect of
rehab
and medical
recovery.
Care as well.
Yeah. It depends on where you are. Some places do a beautiful job integrating mental health. They have psychologists, social workers, recreational therapists, chaplains, peer support, all working together. And in other places, it's still very fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your physical therapy. Here's your pill. Good luck with everything else. So we'd love to see mental health care treated as just as standard as medication, reconciliation, or discharge planning.
Right. There is, you know, the financial cost of all that and also staffing issues. You know, are there enough care providers available?
Right. But imagine if every rehab patient got a routine mental health check-in,
mm-hmm.
not just if they broke down crying in the hallway.
Mm-hmm. And we can't talk about mental health without talking about children, teenagers, and young adults. On the one side, younger generations, you know, their lives are very different. They have social media. They might have more anxiety. They might be more aware of neurodivergence. They might have more trauma in ways that other generations or prior generations could not even conceptualize. On the other hand, we're seeing, because of all of this, we're seeing increased rates of depression, self-harm, and suicide in some groups. And
schools are trying to help, though, right?
Well, see, that's another thing. I always feel like you should front load things, you know, provide children with adequate nutrition, a safe place to learn, and teach them how, you know, coping skills at a young age. And then you're only going to be caring for that the children and not the adults. So if you provide for the children, then you're providing them that structure. It's like building a house. If you don't have a good foundation, your house is going to be, you know, it's not going to be strong.
Right.
So we need to provide that foundation. And in most cases, we're not. We're providing, you know, we're only increasing the fear that children are experiencing in schools. If they don't feel safe there and they're not given adequate nutrition there and they're not given the ability to learn coping skills, then how can we expect them to grow up to be successful, contributing humans, members to society. Yeah.
Well, I guess part of the problem is some schools have counselors, social emotional learning programs, peer support, and crisis protocols, but many school systems are under-resourced, and only one counselor might be responsible for hundreds of students. And kids with chronic illness or disability face double the pressure. They have to manage their health and trying to keep up academically and socially. If mental health support isn't baked into their care plans, they can slip through the cracks.
And for families out there, it's important to know that it's okay to ask for help for children early on. And children can, you know, face mental health crises. So you don't have to wait until things are, you know, really, really bad, or that you see behavior changes. But if you do see behavior changes, or if your child's withdrawing or showing excessive irritability, having difficulty sleeping, changes in eating habits, if you see grades falling or a loss of interest in things that they typically would enjoy, those can be red flags. And it's okay. And it's important as part of parents and guardians' role that they can, you know, help step in and help those children before things progress.
Right. And for, you know, speaking to the young people, we would say needing help does not mean you're weak. Sometimes the strongest, bravest thing you can do is say, I am not okay, and let somebody show up for you. Let's dream a little. Like, if mental health were changing fast enough, what would that look like?
Well, I think it would be, it would kind of be like that there's no wrong door. Whether you walk into a primary care health provider's office, the ER, a rehabilitation unit, a school, there should be a clear process to connect you with mental health care support no matter where you are.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, currently unhoused, if you're currently dealing with addiction, if you're, you know, whatever the situation is, if you're a senior, there mm-hmm. should be mental health support out there. And then also mental health training for people who interact with, you know, like, I hate to say it, but librarians, you know, teachers, you know.
Scout leaders.
Bus drivers.
Right, I mean, like, right.
It's because we went from institutionalized care to community care. Everyone in the community is now playing a role.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, having reasonable wait times for mental health care, weeks, not months, between asking for care and getting an appointment. But that requires that resources be available, providers are available, so that having enough out there in the community that you could actually get in to see someone. Also integrated care, integrating mental health care into medical teams and healthcare teams and healthcare protocols. Okay. Not, you know, they work in concert. And then support across a lifespan from children to seniors, everyone can use mental health care and support, and especially for caregivers for children and older adults.
And I would add, we're talking about how can what if medical health
yes.
would improve fast
mental
enough?
Health care, yeah.
Yeah, I would say equity is needing a little bit of a boost, or a rethink.
Sure.
Mental health services that are culturally sensitive, available in multiple languages, inclusive of LGBTQ plus folks, and mindful of disability, race, religion, and socioeconomic status. I'd like to see less paperwork and bureaucracy blocking people from care when they're already exhausted.
And also, I would say, too, as we mentioned before, and you said socioeconomic status, mm-hmm. also, if you're currently unhoused and, you know, having that readily available. And I know there are tons of programs and amazing people out there today working to that end.
Okay. From a recreational therapy angle, mm-hmm. I'd love to see more emphasis on what makes life worth living, not just symptom reduction. Things like adaptive sports, art, music, gardening, faith communities, volunteering, travel, even modified or virtual, built into mental health care plans, because I'm not suicidal is a very low bar. We want people to have reasons to want to be here.
And as systems catch up, what can our listeners do?
Well, first, if you are in immediate crisis.
Or
know someone that is. Reach out to your local emergency number or crisis line. If you're in the United States, you can dial or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. If you're outside the U.S., check your country's crisis services. You don't have to navigate a crisis alone. If you're not in immediate danger, but you're struggling, talk to your primary care provider and say clearly, I need help with my mental health. Ask if there is an integrated behavior health provider in the clinic or a referral for one. If you have a specialist, like a neurologist, a rheumatologist, oncologist, ask if they can refer you to someone who understands your specific condition.
And let's look at, you know, the different layers of support. Mental health is not just one thing. And there is no one answer, but formal therapy or psychiatry is, you know, available, and, you know, that can be very helpful. As we mentioned before, peer and support groups, either online or in person, may be beneficial to some people. Community resources like, you know, faith-based community programs, nonprofit programs, support organizations, those might, you know, have resources and personnel to help support you. And then you yourself, there's a lot of things that you can do that may have a significant beneficial impact on your overall mental health. Even just getting enough sleep, which can be difficult. You know, if you're unhoused, getting enough sleep in a safe location, that might be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Getting movement in your day, getting, you know, physical activity, getting nourishing food whenever possible, and taking part in meaningful social activities. Those things can all be beneficial to your mental health.
Yeah.
And, you know, and dealing with addiction and seeking addiction treatment if that is something that is affecting you.
Okay. Well, if you are involved in rehab or medical care, mm-hmm. you should ask, is there someone on the team that focuses on mental health?
Yeah. So if someone comes to you, who do I refer them to, or how can I get them the help they need?
Right. And can I be screened for depression, anxiety, or PTSD? And is there a recreational therapist or someone who can help me rebuild meaningful activities? You are allowed to say, this is affecting my mental health, and treat that as just as real as your blood pressure or lab results. So, we danced around this question for the whole episode. Let's mm-hmm. put it plainly. Is mental health changing fast enough?
It's ever evolving.
Mm. Okay.
Progress has been made in terms of awareness, language, and access through technology and access to care. But people are still falling through the cracks every day, especially those with limited resources or complex medical needs.
Well, I would say that we're moving in the right direction, mm-hmm. like you said, mm-hmm. but the pace doesn't match the urgency. The need is massive. For instance, post-pandemic stress, chronic illness, caregiving burnout, economic pressure, social isolation. The system has not scaled up to meet that reality yet. But we don't want to leave you feeling hopeless, and change is happening, and you are allowed to be part of pushing it forward by speaking up and asking for mental health support as a standard part of care, mm-hmm. supporting policies that expand access, and nurturing your own and your loved one's mental well-being in small, everyday ways.
And we hope that, you know, this helped inspire you to, you know, incorporate mental health in your everyday life for you and your family. And maybe, you know, bring it up in your next medical or healthcare provider or appointment. And if today's episode brought up some feelings for you, please reach out to someone that you trust. And if you need it, there are crisis services available.
And remember, needing help is not a failure. It's not a weakness. It's a human reality. It's a part of the human body. Mm-hmm. Your body gets ill at times, your mind can get ill at times. Everything needs a cure, and you got to reach out for it.
I wouldn't say a cure.
A remedy?
Everything, yeah, okay.
Okay. And your mental health deserves attention and care, not someday, but now.
Thank you for taking the time to join us for this episode of Podcast DX. Is mental health changing fast enough? This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition and before starting a new program. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard of this podcast.
Till next week.